Welcome to the Cancer Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance, please press star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Danielle, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Connect workshop, Triple-Negative Breast Cancer in African-American Women. It's a program that many of you have asked us to offer, and we hope to offer it more often as well. Today's program is a collaborative effort between the Triple-Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, Cancer Care, and many other cancer organizations, both general cancer organizations and breast cancer organizations. It's a very important program for us to be offering, and we have on the call today over 968 participants on the call today. And that's a reflection of your interest in the program, and we're really very happy to have so many of you on the call today. You come from all over the United States, and we also have international participants from Canada, Egypt, Kenya, Nigeria, Tunisia, the United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So it's a bit of a global call, really, from all over the world, actually. And today's program has been made possible by the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, and I really want to thank them very much for their support of this program today. Now, you've received materials from Cancer Care, and I would ask you to take a very careful look at the evaluation form that you received and to take a moment at the end of the day's program and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, you are our best consultants in terms of the programs we should offer going forward. Many of you know what your needs are, what would be helpful to you, and we would like you to take a moment and use that form just to fill out, take some minute or two to fill it out, and to tell us what you'd like us to offer going forward. Indeed, our being able to offer this program is really a reflection of many of your requests that we would offer this program. Now, we have wonderful speakers today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Edith Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell is Clinical Professor of Medicine and Medical Oncology, Program Leader, Gastrointestinal Oncology, Department of Medical Oncology, Director, Center to Eliminate Cancer Disparities, Associate Director, Diversity Affairs, Kimmel Cancer Center at Jefferson. Dr. Mitchell is going to present an overview of triple-negative breast cancer, including clinical trials, triple-negative breast cancer in African-American women, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Mitchell.
Dr. Messner, thank you very much. And thank you for all of the participants who have dialed in for this program today. It is a privilege for us to speak with you today about a subject that is very important, not only in the United States, but in other countries, as you will hear later in this program. First of all, the American Cancer Society in 2014 has indicated and documented that there are steady declines in cancer death rates in this country, and that over the last 20 years, the last two decades, there has been a 20% drop in the overall risk of dying from cancer in the United States. And this has really been a remarkable answer and outcome. For cancer research has been very prominent in the last two decades, and it is the method that we evaluate our efforts, but also it's important for the research and very important that many patients have participated in clinical trials and therefore participated in these wonderful outcomes. So the outcomes are much better. Fewer patients are dying of cancer, and therefore more patients surviving with cancer. What we do know from evaluating for breast cancer, however, that there are disparities. And disparities occur disparities for which we have collected data over many years, demonstrating that African-American patients have a much worse prognosis and therefore poorer outcomes with the treatment of breast cancer. And it's not just related to poor access to care and therefore patients presenting with late-stage disease. Disparities are present between African-Americans and Caucasian patients in this country, whether they present with small tumors and therefore early-stage disease, or whether they present with late-stage disease, and in other words, have advanced cancer at the time of diagnosis. So what we can say is that African-American women have a worse prognosis for the treatment and outcomes in breast cancer. And thus, that has contributed to an enormous amount of research. Much of that research is based on the fact that receptors located on the breast cancer cell can be different. And therefore, there are three receptors for which we routinely check all patients' tumors for in the United States. They are the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and the HER2 new receptors. And patients' tumors may have different combinations of these three receptors. And when they are all negative, that is called triple negative breast cancer. So some patients' tumors are positive for the estrogen receptor and or progesterone receptor, and certain hormonal therapies, therefore, are available for these patients. Others may have positive HER2 new receptor, and therefore the medication trastuzumab or some of the newer agents might be amenable to treatment in these patients. But in those patients lacking all three receptors or triple negative breast cancer, none of these agents are effective in treating the patient. So therefore, the title triple negative breast cancer. Now, overall in this country, how do we describe triple negative breast cancer? First of all, there's no expression of the estrogen, progesterone, or HER2 receptor. It accounts for approximately 15% of all breast cancers. And these cancers clinically tend to be more aggressive. And by more aggressive, we mean that there's poor differentiation, which results in a higher recurrence rate after appropriate and usually meaningful and effective treatment. When the tumors recur, they tend to metastasize to major organs, such as the liver or the brain. Chemotherapy is the main treatment option, since the tumors do not respond to hormonal therapy or to targeted therapies such as with trastuzumab, or commonly known by its name, Herceptin. And interestingly, triple negative breast cancers are, one, more commonly seen in young women, two, more commonly seen in those of African-American descent or Latino or Hispanic descent, and then more commonly associated with BRCA1 evidence. So more common, and they tend to occur, as I said, in about 10 to 15% of cancers throughout the United States. However, in some regions, there is a higher incidence of triple negative breast cancer. And here in Philadelphia, we have found that about 20% of patients will have triple negative breast cancer. So in a group of patients from many hospitals, about 1,600 hospitals throughout the United States, there was a research report demonstrating, again, African-American women when compared to Caucasian women, younger age at the time of diagnosis of cancer, more advanced stage at the time of presentation, and an increased incidence of biologically aggressive tumors, those that are triple negative and high grade. And this was true for all ages, all stages of the disease, whether there was early stage or late stage at the time of diagnosis, and there was also no difference in relationship to income variables. Consequently, there has been a lot of research on triple-negative breast cancer. One of the research areas has been risk factors for development of triple-negative breast cancer. They tend to be obesity, the lack of breastfeeding, a higher number of births at younger ages, and the genetics related to BRCA1. Triple-negative breast cancers after effective treatment tend to recur more frequently within the first 2 years after treatment, and therefore occur very quickly after successful treatment. There has been some discussion about basal subtype, and what is true is that basal tumors tend to be more triple negative, but it's not absolute. So some triple negative breast cancers are basal-like, and others may not be. So you can't depend on just the appearance of the tumors of basal-like. Now, how did we get all of this information? This information has been collected from many different clinical trials. Therefore, it's very important for patients, especially with triple-negative breast cancer, to participate in clinical trials so that we can learn more about the disease, but also so that we can define personalized medicine. And by personalized medicine, many of the clinical trials now are utilizing not only information on progesterone, estrogen, and HER2 new receptors, but on other receptors that may be present on the breast cancer so that we can find new treatments for these cancers and thereby offer better and more effective treatment for triple-negative breast cancer. Consequently, it's very important that individuals participate in clinical trials. And what kind of clinical trials are ongoing now for triple-negative breast cancer? Many of the trials utilize new agents or some old agents that might have less effectiveness in other types of breast cancer, but are more effective in triple negative, such as platinum agents, the PARP inhibitors, circulating tumor cells, and we are actually working with these to develop personalized medicine for triple negative breast cancer, with the idea of giving the right therapy for each patient the first time around. We actually have a large study here at Jefferson utilizing platinum agents and PARP inhibitors. So clinical trials around the country and very important for us to advance the positive outcomes for triple negative breast cancer. And these outcomes are looking up, and it's bringing together all of our resources, community outreach and education, and that's what we're doing today, discussing this, partnerships to overcome barriers, pulling together our basic scientists, our clinical scientists and clinicians, as well as epidemiology, with the overall goal of improving clinical outcomes and saving lives in triple-negative breast cancer. And therefore, very important that patients ask this information of your physicians and thereby look for and participate in clinical trials in clinical care in terms of triple-negative breast cancer. I thank you for your attention today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Mitchell, for really setting the stage for the program today and for really giving all of us a call to action here, and also for all of our participants to really have those dialogues with their physicians, and we'll talk more about that throughout the call. And thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Lisa Newman. And Dr. Newman is going to be, Dr. Newman is a professor of surgery, director of Breast Cancer Center, University of Michigan, Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Newman is going to address the role of surgery, triple-negative breast cancer research, looking at African ancestry, and quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Newman.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and good afternoon, everyone. You've just now heard an extremely eloquent presentation by my friend and colleague, Dr. Edith Mitchell. Thank you, Edith. I enjoyed that a great deal. And Dr. Mitchell spoke to you about the nature and significance of having a triple-negative breast cancer diagnosis. For the next few minutes, I'll be talking about the implications of having a triple-negative breast cancer diagnosis on the surgical treatment options. I'll also discuss my research looking at triple-negative breast cancer among women with African ancestry, and I'd like to speak with you about an international breast cancer research program that is based at the University of Michigan, where we've been studying and comparing the breast cancers of white American women, African American women, European women, and women from Western Sub-Saharan Africa. So first we'll talk about developing the surgical plan for a woman diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. But I'd actually like to initiate these comments by discussing the selection of the breast biopsy technique, which is of course going to be a discussion before the cancer diagnosis has even been established. For any woman with a new breast lump or a suspicious abnormality on her mammogram or breast ultrasound, performing a needle biopsy as the first step is usually the most efficient way to document the cancer diagnosis. Needle biopsies are accurate procedures. They can pretty easily be done in the clinic or in the radiology suite under local anesthesia, and they simply involve sampling small fragments of a breast lump using a specially designed needle biopsy device. Results from the needle biopsy are usually available within 2 to 3 business days, and they will usually document not only the cancer diagnosis, but also those molecular markers that you heard about from Dr. Mitchell, the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and the HER2 new marker. And evaluation of the presence or overexpression of these markers or proteins is obviously critical in establishing the diagnosis of a triple-negative breast cancer versus a non-triple-negative breast cancer. The patient can then discuss her diagnosis with the treatment team based upon that needle biopsy report, and she can make plans to undergo all of her cancer-directed surgery to be done within a single operative or anesthetic setting. It is, however, also important to note that occasionally, not often, but occasionally, the needle biopsy will be inadequate in confirming the cancer diagnosis. And in this circumstance, the patient will need to go to the operating room for a surgical breast biopsy, which will involve making an incision on the skin of the breast and removing a sample of breast tissue. Now, once the diagnosis of cancer has been established, whether that's through the needle biopsy or a surgical excisional biopsy, then the surgical treatment plan is going to be generated, and this treatment plan will generally be completely independent or separate from whether or not the patient was diagnosed with a triple-negative breast cancer or a non-triple-negative breast cancer. The surgical treatment plan needs to address 3 important principles. The first principle is that the actual cancerous area needs to be removed. This is the same principle that is addressed whether the cancer happens to be located in the breast or in the colon, in the lungs, wherever. And this makes sense. If it's at all feasible to remove the body of that cancerous lump, you want to do so. And this is the reason why the majority of breast cancer patients need to have some surgery as one component of their care. Now, the second principle is a little bit more specific or unique to cancers that are diagnosed in the breast. And this is the principle that the entire breast as an organ needs to be treated, because in about 50% of patients, you can have microscopic, invisible amounts of cancer hiding in totally separate parts of the breast compared to where the cancerous lump was identified. The third principle is that we need to comprehensively stage the cancer, and this is why surgery to evaluate the lymph nodes or the glands of the underarm area is going to be critically important in any patient with an invasive breast cancer, such as the triple negative breast cancers. Whether or not cancer is present in those lymph nodes is an important clue in allowing us to decide on whether or not chemotherapy will be important in that patient's care. Now, the oldest form of surgery for breast cancer is the mastectomy surgery, which can be done with or without breast reconstruction. And the alternative to the mastectomy surgery is the breast conserving or breast saving surgery. With breast conserving surgery, we perform a lumpectomy to remove the diagnosed cancerous growth. And then the lumpectomy is followed by breast radiation treatments to kill or to sterilize the microscopic disease hiding in other parts of the breast. Now, lumpectomy is wonderful surgery from the perspective of being less disfiguring compared to the mastectomy, and some patients will be better candidates for lumpectomy surgery compared to others. The smaller sized tumors are better suited to lumpectomy, and you also want to see a mammogram that does not show any evidence of diffuse disease throughout the breast in order to say that your patient is a good or appropriate lumpectomy candidate. Now, the lymph node staging surgery is going to be important regardless of whether the woman opts for the mastectomy surgery or the breast conserving surgery. The lymph node surgery is going to be necessary, again, so that we can have best information regarding the value of chemotherapy. Most patients will undergo a procedure called a sentinel lymph node biopsy to stage the glands of the underarm area. Survival from breast cancer is exactly the same regardless of whether the breast saving, lumpectomy, and radiation therapy or the mastectomy surgery has been performed, because survival from breast cancer tends to be related not so much to the procedure performed on the breast, but survival tends to be dictated by whether or not there is disease in other organs, disease that we call micrometastatic disease in other organs, which would then require medical, non-surgical treatments to eradicate. The medical or non-surgical treatment options are what we call systemic therapy for breast cancer, and this is usually going to be in the form of chemotherapy for women with triple-negative breast cancers because, as you already heard from Dr. Mitchell, targeted therapies such as treatments to combat the hormone receptor-positive cancers or the HER2-new overexpressing cancers, these are treatments that are not appropriate for women with triple-negative disease, and so we do need to rely on chemotherapy for these patients. So chemotherapy can be life-saving in any patient where we see that there are clues that there is microscopic disease, micrometastatic disease in other organs such as the liver, lungs, bones. And again, the lymph node status is going to be critical in making this determination. I also want to comment that when I talk about micrometastatic disease, I am talking about disease hiding in other organs that will be invisible on special body imaging studies such as CAT scans or bone scans. Chemotherapy is more likely to be necessary for the triple negative breast cancers because of the tendency for triple negative breast cancers to be biologically more aggressive. But chemotherapy won't always be necessary, and this is why screening and early detection of triple-negative breast cancers is so very important. If you do find a triple-negative breast cancer at a very small size when the lymph nodes are negative, sometimes those patients can be managed by your surgical plan alone without needing chemotherapy. For many triple-negative breast cancer patients, however, chemotherapy will indeed be necessary, and if it is pretty clear based upon the size of the cancerous lump that chemotherapy is going to be delivered to that triple-negative breast cancer patient, then sometimes we will actually suggest that the patient receive chemotherapy before she has her breast surgery. Survival will be exactly the same as long as the patient receives both components of her care, the surgical approach and the chemotherapy. And in some cases, doing the chemotherapy first provides the patient with an opportunity to evaluate her own personal preferences in terms of choice of mastectomy surgery versus lumpectomy. It can also give her an opportunity to shrink down the tumor so that she can be a better lumpectomy candidate after the chemotherapy has been delivered. The triple negative breast cancers are also, as Dr. Mitchell mentioned, the tumors that are more likely to be associated with hereditary predisposition, and so getting the chemotherapy first might provide the patient with more time to go through the genetic counseling and genetic testing process. And so to summarize the discussion of surgery for triple negative breast cancer, mastectomy surgery is equal to lumpectomy and radiation in terms of survival, but with either breast surgery approach, the lymph node evaluation is necessary. In some patients where it is pretty clear that chemotherapy is going to be necessary, it can be advantageous to deliver the chemotherapy before the surgery so that the patient has time to evaluate her personal preferences and has time to go through genetic counseling, and shrinking the tumor down might give the patient a cosmetic advantage when it is ultimately time for her to have the lumpectomy procedure. So now with the last minute of time, I want to just comment on the International Breast Cancer Research Program that I alluded to initially, where we at the University of Michigan have partnered with the Komfenochi Teaching Hospital in Kumasi, Ghana, to study the breast cancer burden of women from Ghana. And we do, in fact, see many similarities in terms of Ghanaian women with breast cancer compared to African-American women with breast cancer. We see the higher risk for triple-negative disease. We see the higher likelihood of having a high-grade tumor. And interestingly, male breast cancer is actually more common both in African Americans and in Africa. And so this research has been very exciting in terms of trying to understand the genetics of triple negative breast cancer, and it's allowing us to understand more about breast cancer disparities here in the United States. And so I will close there, but I do once again thank everybody for their time and attention, and I thank Dr. Messner for inviting me to participate today.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Newman. That was really exquisite and wonderful, and I think that there'll be many questions for you during the Q&A, and very informative. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Carrie Anders. Dr. Anders is Associate Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, Weinberger Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Anders is going to address current standard of care and new treatment approaches, clinical trial updates, and managing side effects, neuropathy, and pain. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Anders.
Thank you so much. I truly appreciate this opportunity to speak to everyone today, and I also want to thank Dr. Mitchell and Newman for such nice presentations leading up to the systemic therapy portion of our conversation to place this into context. Over the next 10 minutes, I'll be talking about current standard of care and new treatment approaches for triple-negative breast cancer, and we'll review what is currently being administered in the clinic for both early-stage triple-negative breast cancer and metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. Then we'll move into a discussion of clinical trial updates, and again, we will be discussing clinical trial opportunities both in the early stage as well as the metastatic settings. And then finally, we'll discuss managing side effects from chemotherapy effectively after completion. So beginning with standard of care and new treatment approaches in the early stage triple negative breast cancer, as mentioned by my previous speakers, triple negative breast cancer is unique in that it lacks the three main receptors that we usually target in breast cancer care, the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and HER2. And while we're making tremendous strides in the laboratory to try to understand what factors make triple negative breast cancer grow, if it's not these three receptors, we are still administering cytotoxic chemotherapy in the clinic, and my hope is over time we'll be able to incorporate targeted therapies into our chemotherapy regimens as well. In early stage breast cancer, so that's breast cancer that either is within the breast or in the lymph nodes under the arm or the axillary lymph nodes, we commonly recommend chemotherapy for women who have sizable tumors or those who have lymph nodes involved with cancer under the arm after a sentinel lymph node biopsy or an axillary lymph node dissection. And I have to say, in my own practice, the majority of patients who are healthy enough to receive chemotherapy with a diagnosis of triple-negative breast cancer are recommended to receive systemic chemotherapy. The standard agents that are used in the early stage triple-negative breast cancer setting are a combination of a class of chemotherapeutics called an anthracycline, and the other name for this drug is doxorubicin. And the partner to this is usually a drug called cyclophosphamide, also known as Cytoxan. And these two drugs are given together every other week for usually four treatments and are termed AC chemotherapy. And in select settings, we also will combine the AC chemotherapy with a taxane or another class of chemotherapeutics that interact with cancer cells in a different way. This class of drug is called a taxane, and there are two main taxanes that we administer in the clinic, paclitaxel and docetaxel. These can be given together with the AC chemotherapy, or they can be given sequentially, usually over the course of anywhere from 3 to 6 months' time. We typically give chemotherapy either before or after surgery. And when chemotherapy is given before surgery, it's called neoadjuvant chemotherapy, as mentioned by Dr. Newman. And when it's given after surgery, it's called adjuvant chemotherapy. And the decision to give neoadjuvant versus adjuvant chemotherapy is individualized to the patient, to the size of the tumor, the involvement of the lymph node, the desire for surgical choices, and also sometimes based on the patient's lifestyle and what they have ongoing in their life at the time of diagnosis. There's never been a study that has told us that giving chemotherapy before or after surgery is more or less beneficial, so it does give us some options in the clinic. So we'll move on to the care of metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. And again, even though we are making tremendous strides in understanding the biology of triple-negative breast cancer, the large majority of FDA-approved standard of care medicines for triple-negative breast cancer in the metastatic setting rely on chemotherapy. And the way we approach this is also very individualized to the patient. And in most cases, in the majority of cases, we will administer chemotherapy as a single agent as opposed to multiple agents, which is commonly given in other cancer types. And what I mean by this is the physician and patient will decide which chemotherapy is best for them given their current symptom burden and will initiate chemotherapy and monitor. And as long as the therapy is working and is not causing significant side effects, patients will remain on therapy until it's time to switch gears to the next therapy. So there is sequential single-agent chemotherapy in that setting. In some cases, however, symptom burden is too great for one chemotherapy, and this is the time where we will typically give two chemotherapies together. This may be if cancer is in the lungs and causing difficulty with breathing, or in the liver and causing difficulty with function. And again, this is very individualized to the patient, their current symptoms, sites of disease, and also when they receive their last treatment. With regards to time from last treatment, as we talked about earlier, in early stage breast cancer therapy for triple negative disease, we typically give an anthracycline or a taxane-based chemotherapy, such that if recurrence occurs within 6 to 12 months from the receipt of chemotherapy, we may want to switch gears with a different chemotherapy or mechanism of action. If it's been more than 6 to 12 months, we usually lead with a taxane-based chemotherapy, and again, this could be paclitaxel, docetaxel, and in the metastatic setting, we have other tools in our toolkit, including Abraxane and exabepalone, or otherwise known as Exempra. There are also multiple other chemotherapeutic agents that we use in the metastatic setting, again, in a sequential manner. These include the platinums, carboplatin and cisplatin, capecitabine, eribulin, navalbine, the list goes on. And the majority of these chemotherapies are listed in the National Cancer Comprehensive Network guidelines, and we use these guidelines to make our decisions with our patients who are experiencing metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. So with that in mind and understanding the current standard of care chemotherapies that we have to offer our patients with triple-negative breast cancer, let's now move into a discussion of some of the new and exciting clinical trials. And I'm happy to report, at least per my perusal of the clinicaltrials.gov website within the past week, if you look under the search engine for triple-negative breast cancer, there are over 130 clinical trials currently devoted to patients with triple-negative breast cancer. And that's very exciting. It tells us how much research is being translated from the laboratory to our patients, and ultimately the goal would be to have more FDA-approved novel therapies for patients with triple-negative breast cancer. So we'll begin with some of the clinical trials available in early-stage triple-negative breast cancer. And we'll start again back to the very beginning, to the neoadjuvant setting or chemotherapy prior to surgery. And in the past year or so, there have been three large studies that have incorporated a platinum, we discussed this in the metastatic setting earlier, along with standard anthracycline taxane-based chemotherapy. And the goals of these studies to date have been to increase the pathologic complete response, or complete eradication of the breast cancer in the breast prior to surgery. And we are currently waiting to see if these differences in pathologic complete response will correlate to improvements in long-term survival. What we do know to date, at least in these three studies, is that consistently the addition of a platinum to an anthracycline taxane-based chemotherapy have increased rates of pathologic complete response. Again, no cancer found in the breast at surgery. And in some cases, this is an appropriate use of a platinum. I have to say at this point in time, I don't believe it is a one-size-fits-all, and we are still waiting to see how the addition of a platinum, which does come with some side effects, affects individual patients and which tumors might be most responsive to a platinum. In addition, there is an ongoing study trying to answer this question, which is which patients are best suited for a platinum, and that's through an organization called the Translational Breast Cancer Research Consortium, where patients' tumors are analyzed at their biopsy. They are then administered either a platinum or a taxane and then go to surgery. And factors that are present in their initial breast biopsy will help us understand which patients might be best suited for a platinum as opposed to a taxane based on which ones achieve a pathologic complete response. There is a second study ongoing through the Alliance, another large organization who runs clinical trials in the United States, evaluating a platinum with a second drug called a PARP inhibitor. And this is a very interesting compound or class of compounds, which basically blocks the ability of a tumor to repair DNA damage from chemotherapy. So essentially, PARP inhibitors work well with chemotherapy because as the chemotherapy comes in and damages the tumor, the PARP inhibitor inhibits the ability of the tumor to repair, so more effective tumor destruction. So these are very exciting and are trying to help us understand which drugs we should be coupling with our standard anthracycline taxanes to help patients not only eradicate disease in the breast, but also live longer without breast cancer. And then finally, in the metastatic setting, clinical trials are trying to help us understand which class of drugs are best to use first in metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. As we talked about earlier, the taxanes are usually given, and we're trying to now understand which taxane is best to give, and there's an ongoing trial evaluating paclitaxel versus eribulin. And then more recently, many of you may have heard about a large effort called the Cancer Genome Atlas, or TCGA, which has basically evaluated hundreds and thousands of breast cancers for mutations that drive the growth of cancers, particularly triple-negative breast cancers. And I won't go into all of the different clinical trials that are ongoing, but just to let you know that there are multiple trials based on this data and other laboratory work evaluating PI3 kinase inhibitors, MEK inhibitors, mTOR inhibitors, PARP inhibitors, blockade of angiogenesis or tumor blood vessel growth, androgen receptors, and many others. And then finally, we're recognizing that the immune system plays an important role in the growth of triple-negative breast cancer. And similar to melanoma, there are ongoing efforts to see if we can mount an immune response against triple-negative breast cancer to eradicate cancer cells. So finally, in the last minute or so, I'll just touch briefly on managing side effects from chemotherapy. And while each of these therapies may be effective in targeting tumor cells, they also can leave a long-standing side effects that can be problematic for patients as they're living their life with breast cancer or after a treatment of breast cancer. And some of these side effects include neuropathy, which is tingling in the fingers and toes that can sometimes be painful. And there are multiple pharmacologic agents, including gabapentin, pregabalin, also known as Lyrica, duloxetine, also known as Cymbalta, which can be used to help manage the pain associated with neuropathy. Pain is also a problem post-therapy for breast cancer, either through post-surgical pain or pain caused by the breast cancer itself. And there are multiple classes of drugs used to treat pain, including NSAIDs. Again, neuropathic pain, we've just discussed some of these agents. Narcotics are sometimes used, but then also behavioral modifications and as well as physical therapy and acupuncture. And exercise, if safe, is also very helpful. Lymphedema can be a problem after surgery. Early intervention with physical therapy is encouraged. And then finally, I cannot emphasize more the impact of exercise, healthy diet, and stress reduction on overall health, as well as breast cancer health. So with that, I'll turn back over to our moderator, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Andrews. Very comprehensive and very excellent presentation, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A as well. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Allison Nielsen. Ms. Nielsen is an oncology social worker. She's Cancer Care's Women's Cancers Program Coordinator, and she will be discussing Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation Helpline, Cancer Care's free psychosocial support services, and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Nielsen.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner. It's wonderful to be with you all today on this program, and I'm especially proud of Cancer Care's longstanding relationship with the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation. As an oncology social worker, I work with many women and their loved ones who are coping with triple negative breast cancer. I'd like to begin by speaking about the importance of creating a support network when you're diagnosed with cancer, and how Cancer Care and the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation can be a part of that network. There are many ways in which we can help. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization that provides free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Cancer Care programs include individual counseling available face-to-face in the New York area and over the telephone nationally, support groups offered face-to-face in New York City and over the telephone or online nationwide, education about resources and navigating the healthcare system, practical help, and some limited financial assistance. All of our services are provided by licensed master's-level oncology social workers and are completely free of charge. Oncology social workers are trained in the ways in which a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her world. They are experienced in helping cancer patients and their loved ones tackle the various problems that accompany the disease, such as financial demands, physical changes, social adjustment, and psychological impact. Adjusting to and coping with a diagnosis is an important part of the healing process. As you probably know, cancer doesn't happen in a bubble. It impacts the whole person and the entire family. It can be confusing and stressful. You may feel the need to stay strong, keep smiling, or push away uncomfortable feelings. But even the strongest person cannot handle cancer all by herself. The good news is that you do not have to walk this path alone. By asking for help, by joining a support group, or contacting a social work for counseling, you're really demonstrating your own strength and courage. Joining a support group is a way to connect with others in a similar situation where you can share thoughts, feelings, and information about cancer. And individual counseling provides a space that is just yours to voice any concerns and learn ways to cope. These connections help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer experience. Feeling well emotionally can help you deal better with the diagnosis and treatment. At this time, Cancer Care offers a support group over the telephone for women coping with metastatic breast cancer of all subtypes, including triple negative. There's also an online support group for women with triple negative breast cancer. And women with cancer in the New York tri-state area can attend our face-to-face in-person support groups. Other group members with triple negative can offer valuable insight based on their personal experience and lend a sense of community. If you're interested in any of Cancer Care services, please call our HOPE line at 1-800-813-4673 or visit our comprehensive website at www.cancercare.org. We recognize that women with triple negative breast cancer have unique needs and concerns. The Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation has partnered with Cancer Care to offer free professional support services to anyone impacted by a diagnosis of triple negative. The TNBC helpline is staffed by experienced oncology social workers with specific training in triple negative disease. To speak with one of our expert social workers, please call 877-880-TNBC. That's 877-880-8622. I would also encourage you to visit the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation's website at www.tnbcfoundation.org. for specific information about this illness. Here you will also find online discussion forums, which have proven to be a tremendous resource to women battling triple negative breast cancer. As we've learned a lot from today's triple negative breast cancer program, you might need some assistance in digesting it all. Our social workers can help you understand what it means to you and your family. Know that you are not alone. Our services are here to help you. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today, and thank you for your participation.
Well, thank you so much, Allison. That was really wonderful and amazing description of the services from the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation and Cancer Care. And we hope that participants on the call, you may be using the services already, but if you haven't thought to call, please do think about it. It might be great help to you, and all these services are free and can be very supportive to you. Now we have time for questions. We actually have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Danielle to bring all of our speakers on board so you're all here ready to take the questions. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. And if we don't get to your question today, please do not feel disheartened because Cancer Care is here for you, and you can just call us at 1-800-813-HOPE. And I'll repeat this again toward the end of the call. But let's see if we can take as many of your questions as possible. So, Danielle, if you could explain to everybody how to queue up the questions, and we'll let the questions begin.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press star, then one on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. And our first question comes from Connie P. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Lynn Flanagan. Listen to your program with Connie. Dr. Newman, you treated my brother's sister-in-law, Angela Andrews-Ryan, but I just wanted to verify with you and your colleagues, the use of neoadjuvant is such a great tool for ascertaining complete pathologic response to the chemo that's been indicated, and you didn't really emphasize that as much as I thought you would. So I was just curious as to what portion of your patients do you use neoadjuvant first?
And Lynn, it's great to have you on the call, so good to hear your voice. And I'll have Dr. Newman address this, and perhaps some of the other speakers may wish to add to it as well. But Dr. Newman, would you like to address this? And again, remember, every person, of course, is different, so I'm going to ask Dr. Newman to actually address the particulars of this excellent question. Dr. Newman?
Yes, thank you, and that is indeed an excellent question. The issue is the value of looking at pathologic response in patients who receive preoperative chemotherapy, and by pathologic response, the question is related to amount of cancer that's identified in the breast after the chemotherapy has been delivered. And that is indeed a very, very important prognostic feature of the cancer, and I apologize that in the interest of time, I wasn't able to go into this in great detail in my comments, but it definitely is true that when we see proof that the chemotherapy was melting away the cancer in the breast, that is further proof or evidence that the chemotherapy is achieving the ultimate goal, which is to kill or sterilize the microscopic disease hiding in other organs, liver, lungs, bones. And so it identifies a woman who is more likely to be a long-term survivor from her cancer.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for the question. And Dr. Newman, thank you for that excellent answer as well. So thank you. And our next question.
Our next question comes from Lori Y. Your line is now open.
Yes, I was wondering if there are any studies on women with triple-negative cancer who also have underlying chronic conditions. I suffer from fibromyalgia, and it complicated my cancer treatment, but it also raised a lot of questions because I had a difficult time connecting with physicians who could decipher what was strictly the cancer and how it was affected by the presence of the fibromyalgia. Thank you.
Oh, well. Laura, that's an excellent question, a very important question. And Dr. Andrews, could you address the issue of having a chronic health problems, in this instance fibromyalgia, and also triple-negative breast cancer, and how that affects treatment, or if you could comment on that in a general way so that we can all, everyone can benefit.
Certainly. So we recognize that the large majority of our patients who come to us with triple-negative breast cancer will likely have some other medical condition, and this becomes where the art of medicine comes into place, and we have to take the symptoms that patients may currently be experiencing into account when we make treatment decisions regarding chemotherapy. You know, another example would be diabetes with pre-existing neuropathy and avoiding medications that could exacerbate neuropathy. So I think it's just very important to communicate well with your physician about the symptoms you're currently having and trying to avoid medications that might exacerbate those chronic medical conditions while still treating the cancer. And then also, too, having the physicians talking. So, you know, whether or not the medical oncologist needs to contact the endocrinologist or the rheumatologist or whoever may need to be involved to help most effectively take care of individual patients.
Excellent. Thank you. And we have a question from one of our online participants from Lisa. Recently, I have heard discussion about black women waiting to have children later in life being a protective factor against breast cancer. Is this the case, and where can data be found on this? Dr. Mitchell, can you address this question?
Certainly. What we do know from evaluating patients for triple-negative breast cancer is that individuals who have children very early in life, teenagers, and who have multiple children very early have a higher risk of breast cancer. Yet in the overall analysis of all patients with breast cancer, those individuals who have their first child very late in life, and meaning the 30s or 40s, may also have a higher incidence of other types of breast cancer. I would say waiting into later life, meaning the late 30s or 40s, might not be the best idea in terms of overall breast cancer risk. But having children as teenagers certainly increases the risk of triple-negative breast cancer. And if you Google these topics, you will find information. Certainly women who never have any children have a higher incidence of breast cancer too. But if you Google any of those topics individually, you can find information regarding that.
And we would suggest that when you Google, you might want to think about sites like the National Cancer Institute, the American Cancer Society. They're excellent sites. Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation, of course. And are there other sites that we'd like to recommend that might be excellent sites for information?
I always recommend talking it over with your doctor first.
Of course. So that would be the first thing to do. That's an excellent point. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. And then we do have another question. Is there from one of our online participants, is there increasing data regarding black women and BRCA1 and 2 mutations? Is the gene mutation more prevalent in black women than previously thought? Dr. Newman, could you address that question?
The question was about BRCA testing in African American. I would very strongly encourage women, African-American women and women with the non-African background, that if they do have a strong family history of breast cancer, family history of ovarian cancer, men in the family with breast cancer, or if they're diagnosed with breast cancer at a young age, then pursuing genetic counseling and probably testing is going to be appropriate. Women with triple-negative breast cancers, regardless of family history, are also more likely to benefit from genetic counseling and testing. In the past, it was more difficult to identify the particular mutations or the particular abnormalities in the BRCA gene that were relevant to African-American women because there were not enough African-American women that had the testing performed, and so it was more difficult for us to interpret the findings of these testings. Because it's important to understand that these genes, the BRCA1 and BRCA2 genes, they're quite large, and so there are multiple different areas where abnormalities or mutations can be identified. You have to see enough of the particular mutations in a large enough sample of women in order to understand the significance of those abnormalities. Now that we are amassing more information in terms of the BRCA testing in African-American women, we are definitely appreciating that disease-associated abnormalities are more common in African-American women than we previously appreciated.
Excellent. Thank you. And our last question from Roxanne, a four-year triple-negative breast cancer survivor. And, how prevalent is triple-negative breast cancer in Latina women? Dr. Mitchell, would you like to address that?
Certainly. We don't have as much information on Hispanic and Latino women over the years due to many factors. One, self-identification, and two, the United States, the National Cancer Institute, as well as the American Cancer Society for many years only collected information on Caucasians and African Americans. Now we know we need to collect information on multiple other ethnic and racial groups, and that's ongoing. So we don't have as much information as we would like. It appears to be very similar to African Americans, but that is preliminary information. So there are no really good statistics and epidemiologic reports to give us exact information that is accurate.
Thank you very much. So that's a continuous question to certainly ask, and I think, and to ask your healthcare team as well. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. This has been an extraordinary call, one that we would like to do again, actually. I want to again thank the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation for their support of this program. I also want to thank all of you who have asked such great questions, both on the telephone and online, and who have actually chosen to spend this hour with us. Now, this program is a one-hour workshop, and in planning this program, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of 1 hour. So I do want to remind everyone that if you didn't get to ask your question, that you can simply call Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE. You also can call the Triple Negative Breast Cancer Foundation helpline at 1-877-880-TNBC. And that's really important because we don't want you to feel that you're alone with any question or concern you may have. Indeed, we are here for you, and that we're here for you endlessly. And we don't want anyone, when we conclude the program today, to think that you yourself alone have to cope with all the issues or concerns you may have. There are many practical issues and emotional issues and family issues, and even just how to talk to your children or how to talk to you in workplaces and how to get the benefits that you need. All of these things are things that we can help you with. We also do provide financial assistance and practical help as well. So it's all kind of a soup to nuts program. It's everything you could possibly need. I would say go ahead and give us a call. We don't offer medical care, but we can help you to ask and frame the questions to your healthcare team. So I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all for your participation.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may disconnect, and everyone have a wonderful day.